we're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I'm your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host also Mike, and also Mike welcomes us to our first Oscar sprint of the 2019-2020 year with our first Oscar sprint profile. Michael.
Yes, it's a nine-month-long sprint, basically.
You are a track coach, so you can teach breathing at least.
I can teach breathing, yeah. And I can teach collapsing and puking in garbage cans.
Which we do. And even though we don't do cardio.
Right, because when I do cardio, that's basically what
that's
happens
the end
to me.
Result. Yep.
But we did our last OSP of the 2018-19 season like a week and a half ago.
Pretty much, Cold War. Yeah. Yeah. But that wasn't Siri. That wasn't a real OSP.
Yeah. It was a half OSP with a gimmick thrown in there.
Been like a good month since we've had a series.
No, this is like a fully scheduled OSP.
Yeah, yeah. This is the kickoff to the 2019-2020 Oscar sprint. And if you've not joined us before for an Oscar sprint profile, if you don't know what we're talking about and why we're using all these running metaphors, especially because we're two fat guys, well, what we call the Oscar race and the Oscar lead up to Oscar Sunday, which I know just passed, but what we are already focused on the 2020 show, is we call it the Oscar sprint. And what we do with these Oscar sprint profiles, or OSPs for short, is we take would-be, should-be, and will-be Oscar contenders, and we hold them up to the Oscars lens. We talk about both the non-spoiler and a spoiler-filled review. That's where we get basically two reviews for the price of one episode in each OSP. If you've not seen Captain Marvel, which is going to be the movie we're talking about today, don't worry. The first half of every OSP is the non-spoiler review. We talk about the specs, we talk about the production values, we talk about the performances. All non-spoiler variety. We don't get that much into the plot and the twists and turns at all. Then we have a music breakdown. It's the same music. I might change it up at some point, but there's a music breakdown to let you know that spoilers are coming. That's the second half of every OSP. The second half of every Oscar sprint profile is the spoiler-filled edition. We talk about the highlights, the lowlights of the film we saw, and basically what we liked and disliked most about it, and that is where you get all the information about what happened in the plot and the twists and turns and how they affected us and how we thought the script was written and the direction goes and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then, at the end of this, we grade it all. We give it a final grade, slap a grade on it, and that's how we handle these Oscar sprint profiles, and we've done them for a long time now.
Yeah, it's tried and true since the 2017-18 award season. Mike, when you make the new music up, can you make it 90s themed like this movie and like Ace of Base? Ace of Base-ish.
There was so much. We play 6 Degrees of MMO. There was so much 6 Degrees of Courtney Love attached to the music in this movie.
Much. I basically have playlists that are the soundtrack.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's one of the things we'll get into when we talk about the production values, is how this movie sounded. But how we always start off the OSPs is Mike walks us through the cast and crew. So here we go. The Oscar sprint profile of Captain Marvel kicking off the 2019-2020 Oscar sprint. 2020 Oscar sprint. That's the year that the show is going to be taking place on. Mike, what's our cast and crew here?
Yeah, a lot of math jokes top the show every time. A lot of math. Captain Marvel is co-written and directed by Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck from Half Nelson, Sugar, The Affair, Billions, The Big C, Mississippi Grind, couple movies, couple Showtime shows involved there. Tomb Raiders, Geneva, Robinson Doré also pens the script. Oscar winner Brie Larson stars as Carol Danvers / Captain Marvel. Deep Blue Seas, Samuel Jackson is Nick Fury. Darkest Hours, Ben Mendelsohn.
Took a second for that bell to ring, but it got there.
The Young Popes, Jude Law. Crazy Rich Asians, Gemma Chan. Halt and Catch Fire's Lee Pace. And of course, American Beauty and the American President's Annette Bening also star. By the way, Paul Rudd was the guy from Clueless. Where have I heard all those filmography entries before?
Very good. Very well done. We did do what Mike is hearkening back to is we did a preview, a different type of episode the first time we did it for a preview for Captain Marvel, which was actually our last episode released. You can go back and listen to that. And those names are referenced, let's say, in those roles.
Yeah, we came up with a new way to preview movies by guessing the plot, which is a total gag, by the way, so we're not spoiling anything.
And they're 100% accurate.
Right, 100% accurate, though thank God we were 0% accurate.
I beg to differ. Sure.
And I was like laughing at a few things that I thought were going to happen based on our pitches. I was like, wait a minute, Sharknado's coming now, right? No, I was having fun with it. So that added to the likability of this movie.
Oh, good, actually. Good.
Anyway, let me get back to business here. Captain Marvel also stars from Brotherhood, Lashana Lynch, from Gladiator, Shazam, Guardians of the Galaxy, everything this year. He's in like 10 movies. Demon Hansu, from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the rest of the MCU, Clark Gregg, Fortitude's Rune Tempt. It does sound
like Rune Temperature. You're right. Temperature. Yeah.
and Rune Tempt, Sugar's Algenis Perez solo, Game of Thrones, Chukumodu, Mozart in the Jungles, Matthew Marr, and child actor from This Is Us, Akira Akbar.
Mike, who is happier about the MCU being the hit that it is, Kevin Feige or Clark Gregg?
Clark Gregg is making a life for himself.
Yes. Yes, he is.
Like a few characters in this movie. A new life. Story inception and production notes. Look, I mean, we've previewed this movie in 5 separate episodes. We covered the Comic-Con fallout when it was previewed there.
Thank God it's this movie is not what that showed.
Yeah, we covered 3 trailers that were major events in like the trailer universe. Sure were. And of course, we did our own preview, guess the plot, gimmick in the last episode.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to really go into a lot here, just some basic things. This is the 21st film in the MCU. We've reviewed the other 20 films.
Every single one. Yeah. We had a whole MCU rewatch leading up to Infinity War last year.
That was 3 per pod. Yeah. And then we kind of picked up with Avengers Infinity War.
Sure.
All the way through Ant-Man or whatever the hell else came out since then.
What Black Panther, of course. Ant-Man and the Wasp, I think, is the most recent one. We covered that as well.
Yeah, we covered phase whatever that was. It was Black Panther, it was Avengers Infinity War, and then it was Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, if it's a movie, we've covered it, sure.
We covered it. Shooting began for Captain Marvel in March of 2018, ending July in Louisiana.
It sure did. I got more about that.
Yeah, a lot of this movie was, of course, filmed on their Atlanta home base there that I hope, for everything in my being, looks exactly like the Avengers home base. I hope that's just their base of operations.
They just actually constructed the Avengers
Wouldn't
headquarters.
That be cool?
That would be awfully cool, because then you have a living museum that you could turn into and keep making profit off of once you're done making movies.
They should just have it that way.
I don't disagree.
So those are my production notes.
All right, let's talk about some specs for Captain Marvel. Mike already told you some of this, directed by Ryan Fleck and Anna Boden. They, of course, are the indie darlings attached to this. Mike just gave you a bunch of titles that they did prior to getting the Marvel money behind them. The writers for this were Boden, Fleck, and Geneva Robertson-Dwarrett. Like Mike told you, they all get screenplay by credits, while those 3, plus Nicole Perlman and Meg LaFave, all share story by credits.
Yeah, Perlman from Guardians of the Galaxy fame. She did an awesome job taking that off the ground.
A couple of heavy hitters in the writing department for this script. Dwarrett? It doesn't have a big legacy. Mike told you.
Tomb Raider, yeah.
But she's got a whole line of stuff, big names coming out, and she must have a lot of people with a lot of confidence in her. She's young, born in 1985, only has 2 finished writing credits on her resume. They just happen to be the Tomb Raider reboot and this Captain Marvel film, along with another 6 announced projects, including another Marvel character film called Silver Sable, the DCEU's Gotham Siren screenplay, another Sherlock Holmes entry with Robert Downey Jr., the Dungeons and Dragons reboot, and yet another Robin Hood property, because you can never have too many, right?
There's not another Robin Hood
this
property.
This one, though, actually intrigues me. It's focused on Maid Marian, conveniently titled Marian. But this is all to say that Dwarrett is doing just fine in Hollywood.
Yeah, she's killing it. Oh my God. That's like 7 or 8 projects that she's probably been hired to do.
I believe she's having the finishing touches put on her McDuck money tower.
A year younger than me.
Yeah.
Now I'm jealous.
We don't have to talk about that.
I'm overflowing with
This film is having its debut today when you're listening to this, 3-8. We saw it, of course, on March 7th, but actually premiered in London a week ago on February 27th. It's got a 127-minute runtime and a PG-13 rating. Kevin Feige, the aforementioned, of course, is the lone listed producer. He's also doing well financially. Mm-hmm. Pinar Toprak does the music here, as she also did in DC's Justice League movie. Ben Davis, the cinematography. He's done the same for Doctor Strange, Guardians 1, and Avengers Ultron there, and will be doing the same for Disney's Dumbo coming out later this month. Elliot Graham gets the edited by credit, last doing so on the Aaron Sorkin Molly's Game film. The production company, of course, here is A24, and the distributors are Mike and I. You don't need to know those things. It's Marvel and Disney, obviously.
Of course. It's fascinating to me. We have a lot of crossovers from the DCEU here. Isn't that weird?
You would think they'd be like bitter enemies
and
try to outdo each other,
yeah.
But really it's just people writing checks to people that get work done well.
I guess so, but maybe they're cutting people loose over at DCEU after they, you know, having their flops, and then Marvel's scooping up talent that they're losing.
The big story, obviously, between the shared worlds there is the James Gunn, how he's like the ace up the sleeve of DCEU right now after being shunned by Marvel after his little controversy earlier in the year. So definitely a talent sharing thing going on, kind of like Raw and SmackDown. I'm a big professional wrestling fan. If you've never joining us before.
Exactly like that, yes.
There's a listed budget of $152 million for this movie, the production budget. But curiously, I think that actually leaked just by virtue of them having shot some of this film in Louisiana. Because get this, the link on Wikipedia leads you to paperwork filed out of the state of Louisiana, where you'll find that Marvel spent almost $9 million in the state for shooting what they needed there. But as part of applying for both a film permit in the state and also the tax credits, both of these things I actually researched and looked up, Marvel was asking the state for in filming and those tax credits, they had to disclose the total estimated budget amount on the paperwork that is available to the public once it's filed. So don't say my law degree never came in handy, because I researched all this. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Oh, good point, Mike.
Variety has it on pace for a $125 million opening weekend, which would put it as the ninth biggest MCU opening of all time, right ahead of Thor, Ragnarok, and Spider-Man Homecoming. Also give it the highest opening for any film in 2019 by far, by about $70 million over the third How to Train Your Dragon movie, which you also just saw today prior to this.
I did. I did a double feature, and I'm very happy with life right now because it's a beautiful double feature and beautiful visuals. We're going to get into it.
Absolutely.
I love both movies. Let's do it.
Review sites have definitely been affected by those issues with Trolls that we've also talked about in previous MMO Weekly episodes that come out every Monday.
There's still no audience score on Rotten Tomatoes.
And Rotten Tomatoes just changed the layout of their scores and their want to see, anticipated to see. I think that might be in part as a result of this, but I couldn't find anything to confirm that. But the film stands right now at a 6.1 IMDb score on 18,000 plus reviews. Carries a respectable certified fresh Rotten Tomatoes score of 83% on 211 critic reviews, 173 of those positive. Average critic rating is a 6.88 out of 10. Mm-hmm. The 83% would put it just about the middle of the pack in terms of MCU canon movies released. The Metascore, though, does bring reason for some slight pause, however. It's a 65 on 49 Metacritic reviews with a high of 90 and a low score of 38.
Yeah, that's not great.
No, not spectacular, and certainly not as, you know, beloved and admonished as, say, Infinity War was when it came out. But those are your specs here for the Captain Marvel film that we took in. So, Mike, what do we have for a plot premise of this one?
Carol Danvers becomes one of the universe's most powerful heroes when Earth is caught in the middle of a galactic war between two alien races. That old chestnut.
What do you think about that?
I thought it was a convoluted premise going back through the trailers. Like, I was Kree and Skrull. I know it's a big thing in the comics now.
Right.
And I remember heckling the trailers a little bit because Samuel Jackson was dropping very on-the-nose exposition about Krees and Skrulls in the bar scene in the movie. And I was like, whoa.
It was needed, though, for something like this.
It worked. It wind up working for me. But the bottom line is my expectations were a bit mixed on this property going in based on all our previewing. I expect a strong movie because I tend to trust the critics out there, our friends and colleagues-ish in quotes. But bottom line is I expected a strong movie and I didn't think they totally screwed up, but I had some worries, the biggest of which I thought, you know, Carol Danvers could be a bit uncharismatic. She could be a bit of a flat character, and I thought that would have been uncharacteristic for Marvel because they've been known for such charismatic characters, even from the trailers, and we did not get a lot of that in the trailers for this movie here, but I didn't have any problems with it.
Yeah, all accurate, you said, as reasons for concerns and lead up. My expectations, we talked about during the preview, the show that we did, how my I was excited because all the early previews were like really uplifting and happy. We talked about this in MMO Weekly this past Monday as well. But then there was like this wave of secondary critics and I saw all kinds of complaints from people I trust, not just like troll bot accounts that want to dive bomb this score online. But I saw a very, very, very wide variants of complaints from like she doesn't have enough screen time, she's not charismatic enough, is she likable, she's not a likable character, all of which I'll get into and address. So I was definitely worried, hesitantly optimistic, I think is the best way to describe it. And like you, I wasn't disappointed at all in this.
Yeah, it wound up working. We knew the visuals were going to stand up to get into production values. Mike, stunning visuals for this one.
I've actually seen people complaining about the aesthetic. I thought the aesthetic was beautiful throughout the film. You're in like that desolate wasteland at the very beginning. There's a very defined, you know, these are the Scree colors. These are the Krull? Scree and Krull?
I think so, yes.
Krull colors. And I thought it was very easy to follow in that way. The only complaint and gripe I'll have about some of the visuals, I think, was For a Marvel movie, I was kind of surprised how tough it was to follow the fight scene sometimes. I thought the cinematography was a little off. It wasn't as clear as it is in most, pretty much every other MCU movie. It was moving a little too fast for my eyes, so that's my only gripe.
Maybe. I saw it on an AMC Limax,
right,
which I was perfectly happy with. It was gorgeous. It's a huge screen still. I know the ones in New York and the cities are much bigger. Right. I've been to them as well. They're different. They're bigger. It's like going to a movie in a skyscraper.
Right.
Literally. Right. And that's totally different. But I love the huge screen. I did not have a single problem with any of the visuals.
Good.
You're talking about editing a little bit. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I didn't notice anything, but I even forgot all the Samuel Jackson effects. Like at the beginning, if you force yourself, you could see a little bit of an effect there. If you force yourself.
Yeah, maybe. I didn't really see anything to gripe about with him, to be honest. I thought they did a spectacular job overall.
I totally forgot that they have to do stuff with him in every frame.
Yeah.
And after, the first time I saw him, didn't even notice it.
No, same here. I thought it looked, it really did look stunning. And as far for any kind of complaints about and gripes of, I saw it in my little local podunk theater. So any gripes about how it didn't look aesthetically pleasing or kind of looked bland, I just don't understand those.
Well, that cockroach that was crawling across the top of the frame in the whole movie, he was one of those, the watchers.
He was an added effect. Yeah.
Right. But he was one of the watch, you thought he was one of the watchers.
Right, exactly. I thought he was a godlike creature from the MCU.
Yeah,
exactly.
But that was just cockroach. I didn't see one.
Dirty theater. What about how it sounded, Mike?
I love the soundtrack because, like I said, this is a playlist on my Spotify. But I thought the theme music was rousing. I mean, it's all big production values.
So,
I mean, big money production values,
yeah,
for sure.
The soundtrack is, you know, anyone that was raised in the 90s and early 2000s is speaking to you. I think that could lead you astray a little bit. If you go into this expecting to be like, oh, it's a 90s-based MCU movie, we're going to get all our nostalgia. We saw Blockbuster being crashed into. Remember when that was a thing in the previews?
It was enough nostalgia.
Right. It's not chock full of 90s references.
No.
It's not a BuzzFeed quiz. You know, it's not going to tell you which Nicktoon you are by the end of it.
Yeah. It wasn't like, you know, MC Hammer dancing across the screen.
Right.
Give me a break.
But part of the charm of it was the soundtrack in that it did bring you back to that place. And I thought it was kind of cool. There were moments.
Some on-the-nose songs, or one on-the-nose song that I got a little bit peeved at, but that would
agree.
Be in a worse scene.
But I would agree.
Other than that one moment where I was just like, oh, okay, I thought it was terrific.
A Nirvana song plays during a very pivotal moment.
I thought it was strange, but I liked it.
A No Doubt song plays during a very pivotal moment. It was really good, really cool collection if you were raised during the 90s or 2000s.
So performances, Brie Larson's got a lot of shit. She's taken a lot of shit for this performance.
Yes.
And I disagree with
all
that
of it.
Shit.
Same here. Absolutely disagree. I think,
and I was worried too, like you were.
Absolutely. And how could you not be with the reports coming out? But I think it was much in the same way. If you go back and listen to, and again, your brother's going to take a gripe with this, but we reference how in our first man OSP, Ryan Gosling and Clara Ford, the reason we liked them so much is because we were under the impression they chose to give restraint in those performances. They had to be emotionally handicapped.
Yes.
I think the same argument can be made here for Brie Larson, that not emotionally handicapped, but maybe emotionally confused, one based just on how her character was written, but two, also, I think she was kind of juxtaposed against, she's basically, for me anyway, I know you don't agree with this totally, but she was kind of the female Robert Downey Jr. She's the female Tony Stark for me in this.
I'm not against that characterization because in a way you're right. It's the first man. It's the astronaut who is an elite person, basically in an elite career. And that's who Carol Danvers was, we know, as a fighter pilot, right?
Right.
And then she's in this fighting force, which is an elite unit where basically Jude Law in the trailers is telling you, you have to master your emotions. You have to master, you have to control it. And bottom line is, she is a repressed character. And that's works for her throughout the movie. And it's great to see the cracks to the veneer, which is the moments from Ryan Gosling's performance that we love.
Mm-hmm.
Like when the veneer cracks, then you have a moment of great acting. But also, I think there are cracks to the veneer of this character in the script that worked in because there's quips throughout the movie that are not in the trailers, some that are, some that are not. And I love that. And this character is plenty charismatic, and she's one of the most charismatic characters in the film. Yes, of course, just like all of the other Marvel Marvel movies, you have a bunch of sidekicks that steal scenes. You have scene stealers. You have a very generous writing process. Mm-hmm. But that is true for every single Marvel film.
Yeah, and I think the charisma you're talking about, the quips that she has, the cracks of the veneer she has that shows enough personality, I also think that puts to bed the whole, which is a repulsive argument to me because it's so misogynistic. Is she likable enough? She's not a likable character. Listen, she's confident, bordering on arrogant, and very determined. So was Tony Stark. And nobody asked if Tony Stark was likable enough in any of the Iron Man movies. I think because this is a woman playing against stereotypical feminist, I don't know if you want to call them tropes or cinematic, you know, typos, very against type, basically.
The thing is, like, this is not a quote-unquote underdog story. It's not the Captain America
She's the most capable character in the whole movie.
It's more like, yeah, like you said, Robert Downey Jr., you start from an elite level.
A position of strength,
of strength, even though she's going against the super elite, or we could say. And it's in a way, it's like Thor in another regard.
Sure.
So, like, Thor's already a king of the cosmos.
He's a god, Michael.
He's a god of thunder. What is he a god of again? But bottom line is, yeah, she is already coming in, even though she's emotionally handicapped, literally, in the trailers of this story.
Because that's her origin.
Yeah. In the premise of this story. So then that's fine, but it totally works for
her. Yeah, so the whole idea of, you know, she's not a likable character, she's not... I just think, and it's might be a lazy argument on my part, but were she a male, we're not asking those questions. I think it's unfair of us to ask just because we had a screenwriting duo that had the balls to kind of position a leading female, which, by the way, it only took till the 21st MCU movie to have a leading female in the MCU, to position her and write her like that. I thought it was great throughout and through and through. And I thought, like you said, there's enough charisma there. There's enough personality there. I love the character.
When she has a heavy scene, she acts the shit out of it. Like,
Oscar winner, right?
This is one of our best actresses on the planet. Already at her young age, and she can act.
The way she was written, because she was written in such, to me, that was so reminiscent of the Tony Stark character in so many different ways, I do think we've asked during the MCU review, we've asked during previews of this, you know, who are they going to turn the MCU over to should some of our favorites meet their demise at some point in the near future? I think this is clearly, to me, Oscar winner for lead actress.
Yeah,
I think this is clearly the answer.
They're banking on it, and it should happen.
Yeah,
no,
I agree.
No question. Other characters in the ensemble, Samuel Jackson is hilarious.
He's great.
We didn't expect
this. Is
him
like
to be
an
so
old
funny.
School Samuel L. performance too. I can't remember having a Samuel L. character that I liked this much in a movie in a long time.
Just every scene with him, he's got a ton of jokes, and he's a scene stealing character from the MCU. They're very generous to all the supporting characters. I don't think that's a bad thing. They do that in every movie. Why
you kind of have to for a superhero movie these days, right?
It happens in every single movie from Black Panther all the way back to Iron Man. I mean, you can go all the way back to Iron Man,
no arguments.
And you have all these other characters with one-liners that totally steal the show or steal a scene and steal, you know, basically 4 out of 10 scenes.
But it's okay because Tony Stark's doing it because he's a guy.
I'm
going to be bitter throughout this whole thing because I think it is misogynistic.
Right, Don Cheadle in Iron Man 2.
Well, that's Tony Stark's giving those scenes to Don Cheadle, right? I mean, it's you're right. It's happened all throughout the MCU. Mm-hmm. Why is it a problem now? It shouldn't be. It absolutely shouldn't be.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. We agree, weirdly enough, throughout this
doesn't happen often.
Episode.
Actually, doesn't happen often.
We're
going to
have
happens.
The same grade at the end
of
this.
Yeah, we are, which never happens.
So we had Jude Law's group, and they have a lot of meat on the bone to that characterization. I really liked it. To a point, you had a problem with a few of the characters, the big name actors in roles that you were expecting them to break out, maybe, that didn't work for
not
you.
Not even break. I feel like Gemma Chan, I feel like she has broken out a little bit already.
Already.
And this is totally reductive,
this role.
It's just
a muscle flex group.
Right.
Right?
And you can even probably say the same about Jimon Hansu's character in this. But it's a bit reductive. They're kind of just... I understand it's a Marvel movie. You get on screen. It's never a bad thing to be in an MCU movie seen on screen. But, you know, if you're going to have that kind of talent playing side characters, give them something to do.
Yeah, there's some swings and misses. Like he has some jokes in there.
He does. Yeah,
as Karath, and so does that whole group. They're supposed to be characterized more with quips. And they tried. And there's some swings and misses with some of the characters. But you have Clark Gregg back, and he's got a bunch of moments. And if you're a fan of the MCU, going back in time, seeing him again, it's like meeting an old friend.
Right.
That works. He does a great job. You have Lee Pace as Ronan. So you have a lot. I think they want this movie really to be woven into the fabric of the whole 20 movie stretch, and they do that with a bunch of links with Samuel Jackson,
yeah,
with Dumon Hansu from Guardians, with Lee Pace again from Guardians, and I think you have a lot in terms of the screenwriting that links it throughout. And I just want to drop a few script thoughts here to move out of performances. And I loved the script of this movie. I thought they did a phenomenal job. Everything with the villains, everything with the backstory. This is not your typical origin story. We didn't think it would be. We had enough.
I don't think they could have afforded it to be either.
Yeah.
I think you needed to do something different, and hopefully it comes off spectacularly, which I think,
yeah,
they crossed that bar, especially because if this is going to be your new centerpiece for this movie universe that's responsible for billions of dollars, you need to kind of knock it out of the park and introduce her in a unique way. I think they did that without question. It was kind of our second biggest worry behind the characterization of the Carol Danvers character, right? Is what exactly are they doing for this origin story? Because if it's going to be just a paint by numbers origin story,
yeah,
for another superhero, it's going to bore us. We've seen it a billion times.
That happened a lot already in superhero stories, where you do not begin in media res, you begin at the very beginning,
mm-hmm,
where the hero wakes up in the morning, then goes out and gets bit by a radioactive spider.
I was just going to say, you didn't like Spider-Man, is what you're saying.
I did not like the. Well, it's funny when Jack Black parodies it on the MTV Movie Awards from back when I was still watching that. But to go back, and even I didn't like Wonder Woman's origin story. It was a visually stunning.
I had a try problem with it as
I
well.
Had real problems with that because, all right, she's a kid, and then she's getting trained.
Right.
And then we've seen it 100 times before. The conventions are just so bogged down. The mother's telling her a story of the mythology.
Mm-hmm.
Blah. Yeah, I didn't like it. And here we have a very creative way to do the origin story. And I loved the screenwriting here. I think this is next level screenwriting.
I also think this is the Star Wars movie that Star Wars fans have been bitching about not getting for a while.
Yeah, because this is basically interwoven with the Guardians of the Galaxy,
yeah,
universe. And Guardians of the Galaxy would have been the Solo movie I wanted. I wanted
sure,
them to basically
fair.
Just let's you got Scoundrels, you got Han Solo, make it exactly like,
mm-hmm,
Guardians of the Galaxy. And I would have been thrilled with that if they crossed over. But this is, you got a lot of cool space stuff involved here.
Without revealing too much of the plot, and I said this to you, for all the fanboys about Star Wars that bitched about The Last Jedi and how they hated it, if Luke Skywalker, if you replace Carol Danvers with Luke Skywalker and this was your Last Jedi movie, they would be doing cartwheels in the streets, wouldn't they? Isn't this exactly the movie that all those trolls wanted?
She is 100,000 times more charismatic than Luke Skywalker.
That's there too, yeah, absolutely.
And Mark Hamill, I love him, but the Mark Hamill Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi is very charismatic and he's funny, and I like that version of Luke.
Yeah.
From the original Star Wars, give me a break. The character that all of the other characters totally outshine throughout,
right,
that movie. So what are we talking about?
Yeah. If you're a Indiana Jones fan, if you are a Star Wars fan,
right,
if you are an MCU fan, there's so many homages and callbacks, and this is just, it doesn't give you that 90s nostalgia Nicktoons watching MTV feeling. But it does a lot of other things that'll make you feel good and feel good about watching it.
Yeah, I think people go in with very definitive expectations for a movie this big and this important.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't meet those expectations, sometimes it's an issue. That's kind of a reason why I thought of the whole Guess the Plot preview for this, because I was like, enough with all the nonsense.
For real.
You know, it's too overhyped in the lead up.
You're not kidding.
Let's just do a goofy gimmick, a goofy ass gimmick for this. I think we're going to do that with all the quote unquote movie events from here on out. We're going to guess the plot and just be idiots about it and have fun with it, because enough, just sit down and let these master storytellers swoop you up in a great yarn.
Boy, do I
just
have something in store for Dumbo. But it's not going to be an elephant at all.
Mike, bottom line is there is an Oscar lens for this at the end of the day.
Sure.
I think visual effects, these are some of the best I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I was going to comment on how, now again, you're going to, I have three different roads that just came to my mind about where I wanted to take this, so I apologize for starting and stopping there. The historical Oscars for the visual effects usually goes to the one that relies on more practical effects. Again, this is very heavy CGI. I don't know if it's something that will speak to the Academy in that way. I think it absolutely needs to be nominated.
It's also CGI, like, in the wild blue yonder. I mean, you got CGI in a desert.
Yeah, and it looks
phenomenal. It looks seamless.
It looks great.
You have Captain Marvel doing her thing in a desert, in the Grand fucking Canyon. She's going off, and I don't notice an awkward shot.
No, I'm with you. These are some of the best effects I think I've ever seen in a movie. They may rival Infinity War, quite frankly.
I wonder if the Academy will like this too, because you have a lot of practical effects in the city when they're in the city.
Sure.
With the subway.
I mean, they exist. Yeah. Don't get me wrong.
There's a lot of practical effects there too.
It's just historically, it's not the type of movie that does get rewarded. I do think it's worthy of reward, obviously. Yeah. I do think it's worthy of nomination. I would be surprised if it doesn't get nominated, because this is going to be a very high bar to cross, even for something like Endgame.
We know our visual effects as critics. Like, that is our ball game. Mm-hmm. These are great visual effects.
Yeah, they are. Absolutely. No doubt.
Okay, so any final thoughts on this thing in terms of non-spoilers?
I think if you go in, we always talk about how our expectations rule the day. If you're the type that's looking for something to be wrong, and you're going to see two or three things that don't fit a great movie, and you're going to overblow them because you want so desperately for this not to be a great movie. Yeah, you'll find them. They're there.
They are there. We do have some worse scenes coming up in the spoiler section, so it is not a perfect movie.
No.
I think, to be honest, I think people are nitpicking with that 65 Metascore. I think this is a 70-something, 80-something. Like, to me, I'm going to give this a strong grade at the end of the day that is much higher than a 65 Metascore.
I will, too, and that's the other half of my statement I was going with. If you go in this and you say, okay, I'm going to take what this gives me and I'll react to it afterwards and I'll judge if it's a good movie. I'll let it rise or fall on its merits. I'll let it prove itself to me. I don't see how you can't walk away being impressed by something. I left the theater. I was behind a father with a young boy and a young girl, and I asked them all, and you could just see the wonder in the young girl's eyes. She said, I loved it. And, you know, that matters. That shit should mean something.
I think you got a lot of critics out there that are basically not MCU people, right? It's not their go-to thing. They are more about If Beale Street Can Talk than they are about Iron Man 3.
Or they don't like the Disney business model. Yeah, there's
so
a whole bunch of
reasons. So are they going into this saying that, all right, this is my MCU movie, or this is an MCU movie that I need to like, or that I could like? And then they have their own built-in preconceived notions that we've talked about and throughout that 5-episode preview that we did, gosh darn it. So maybe that's a factor. And I do think there are some off notes, like I said about, you know, A Star Is Born. I think there's some off scenes in this.
Without
off
question.
Notes. Definitely. But this is an unquestionably good movie.
I agree. And let's tell you why specifically. Let's dance.
Yeah, watch it.
Spoilers ahead!
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
Mike and Oscar! Oscar Sprint! Spoilers!
This is the spoiler section of the Oscar Sprint Profile review of Captain Marvel, brought to you by Mike, Mike, and Oscar. If you've not seen the movie yet, this is a good place for you to hit pause, go back, watch the movie, hit play when you come back. We'll be here waiting for you. If you've seen the movie already, if you want to hear our thoughts on what happens in the plot, or if we've just hyped it up so much for you in the first half, you cannot go another minute without hearing our takes on the spoilers and the twists and turns. This is where you want to be. It's all spoilers all the time. The Oscar Sprint Profile of Captain Marvel, brought to you by Mike, Mike, and Oscar. Usually we start with carryovers, but for this, we're kind of, since we already went over a lot of the plot, we feel, in the non-spoiler section, or at least, you know, we set the stage.
We tease the shit out of every single thing in this movie in the non-spoiler section.
The last thing we ended with on non-spoilers was some of our, there are holes in this movie. There are things we have issue with and we take umbrage with. I think we're going to say a lot more positive about the movie than negative, so let's get the negative out of the way first. Let's start with what we think or what we consider to be lowlights. Mike, what'd you have problems with?
Okay, I think there's some big coincidences in this plot.
You think?
There's some big coincidences. Now, in a comic book movie, I tend to say, all right, fine, I get it. But the biggest coincidence involves the main plot that she is still involved with. It was the plot that she's always been involved with her whole life.
Go ahead.
She has been involved with this Kree versus Skrull war.
Right.
That happened to be her flight instructor.
Right.
Who is in charge of saving the Kree or the Skrulls.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to get into all that because it's our best scenes too. But
she's on the side of Ben Mendelsohn.
Yeah, she's never left this one plot line. And okay, fine. I get that. Basically, this plot line will be responsible for her greatest mentor character
yeah.
in Annette Bening
yes.
to her, how she gets her powers.
Yeah.
To like, the basically what she has to do with stopping the quote unquote alien invasion that we all thought she was going to stop. And it turns out to be a different bad guys, which I loved.
Right.
But that she never got out of the one plot line, which is common in movies, but it always bothers me in movies, I guess.
Yeah, like she was always destined to be the savior of this war, even like from like flight school, where she just happened to have this Annette Bening character as her mentor, and she just happened to be the alien that needed its saving, and just happened to take this one recruit randomly. I agree.
The mission she's on has been the mission of her life,
right,
Mike.
Right.
And I guess that's an old trope. They did it very creatively. It happens in so many movies. It really does.
And the believability of the Annette Bening character, who is Brie Larson's mentor, and she does tab Brie Larson. Annette Bening is on the Kroll side. She's supposed to getting to the Tesseract, essentially, or the power source of the Tesseract. And Brie Larson doesn't know that she's an alien, so they crash land. Annette Bening starts bleeding blue, and Brie Larson takes everything that happens in stride. She's this Air Force lieutenant, and she just takes Annette Bening's an alien on her deathbed, shot to death by an alien, another alien in Jude Law, with a Star Wars gun, and Brie Larson, the human at this point, questions none of this and just like goes with her mentor's last words of shooting the energy source, which apparently is an intergalactic energy source, questions nothing, is not amazed by an alien space gun, is not amazed that her mentor has essentially lied to her throughout her entire professional career, not stunned by a thing, and just okay with everything.
They laughed it off when they crashed. They basically laughed right. it off in a sense. I kind of enjoyed it because she was like, well, I didn't think aliens existed until one shot at us and you started to bleed blue. That was the laugh off line.
Okay.
You're right. They really pushed to the limit that principle we've been talking about with MCU movies all along.
You're suspending your disbelief.
But you laugh off the obvious objection, right? With a joke. Basically, you joke away the obvious objection.
That was rough.
Yeah, it's hard. It stretched that principle to the nth degree. But then again, if it made you laugh, then you get a 90s song out of it, then it's good. And I like the whole twist with Jude Law being the one that actually shot the gun. And that's the moment you realize, oh, Jude Law is a full-blown bad guy.
Which was a nice twist. Yeah, a really nice twist and a cool twist, especially in an origin story, how it sets you up. Yeah. I also, I don't want to get too far into the likes and things that we highlighted because I had one more dislike. But I also like the way this movie was marketed primarily because Jude Law, you know, Brie Larson starts on her side.
I knew it all along.
Right. You find out essentially.
Just by his look, the fact that he had the green eyes was evil.
It's because he's British, be honest.
He's an evil pope. He's British. Didn't we call that?
Yeah, but I think that's smart by the marketing, because you weren't sold that her and Jude Law were old buddies.
I was so sure that Jude Law was going to be a bad guy in this movie that I didn't mention it in my guessing of the plot, because I didn't want to total quote unquote spoil something that was actually going to happen in the movie.
Right. So, yeah, I think that's a highlight in that they never actually said, you know, you should feel safe with Jude Law.
But it still worked on me because I wasn't entirely... Then I kept going back and forth once the movie started. So I think they did a solid job with that. I thought they're all right. He's just a badass mentor character. But then I saw Juman Hansu. And once like Ronan showed up talking to Jude Law, I'm like, oh, okay, all right, this is actually going to happen.
Right.
And then when they confirmed it in that scene with Annette Bening, I'm like, all right, that's... great.
Just to wrap up what we didn't like, though, is we have some problems with some stuff that's very on the nose in this movie.
Okay, so there's two things for me. The one thing that really bothered me was the No Doubt song.
Yes, I could see that.
And it's just totally on the nose. If it was just an instrumental, I would have loved it. Because, all right, I would be singing the lyrics in my head. I know the lyrics are on the nose for that scene. Mm. It's the girl fight scene. Why do we have to have I'm Just a Girl? I mean, it's for kids, I guess.
I knew.
Speak the truth.
Gwen Stefani would eventually ruin the MCU for all of us. Yeah.
It's just on the nose.
You're absolutely right. It is.
We don't need it. If it was in Wonder Woman, I'd say the same thing. Yeah. It's too much.
Now, it fits the 90s music, the soundtrack you have.
It's a great song. Yeah. It's been in my playlist forever. Yeah. It's a great song, but it's not the song for the girl big fight scene.
And we've done enough to have this feminist movie and this heroic movie empowering women. Yeah. And yet, when it comes to the Rambo character agreeing to join her...
This is the best friend. This is the best friend fighter pilot mom that she basically lived her whole life with being best friend.
She's willing to leave her daughter behind on a suggestion to fight aliens alongside her amnesiac ghost of a former best friend because her 10-year-old daughter says, don't you want to set a good example for your daughter?
That's not great.
What? That's not great. Isn't she a single parent as well?
Single parent. She probably should stay out of it. But it's cool the way they pay it off.
That's fine.
I love the fact that she had all that agency and driving.
Yeah.
Flying. So it really actually turns into a best scene because it's a really cool way where they're going through the caverns. You have the landscape worked in, and then you're doing like a wraparound thing where they're going to collide. Yeah. And then she does that crazy flight move where she turns on the thing.
Really cool payoff. I agree.
And sneak attacks. Great. But you're right. That's kind of a ridiculous way
convenience,
to get her there.
Convenience and on-the-noseness, like how Carol Danvers, who was once thought dead, just shows up on Rambo's front doorstep. And just because they're supposed to be best friends, they instantly are shown to have that chemistry where they're like one-upping each other and what is a shortcut cheating? Like, all right, you're an alien still. You don't know who you are yet. Let's relax.
It's interesting, though. Like, from the very beginning of the movie, she still has her personality in a way.
She does. That's true.
Which is kind of cool. So it's not like she has amnesia, but she's a ball buster, literally and figuratively, the whole movie, which is, I think, is cool. Because if she was just the Terminator, you know, the whole movie, and then at the end she becomes Carol Danvers again, that would have been bad. But
absolutely agree with everything you just said.
But
absolutely.
She is quipping with Jude Law and Annette Bening and, of course, Samuel Jackson the whole movie, too. So I didn't have as much a problem with that. I thought this big scene where... So Rambo comes outside, and there's that big scene where she has to this is who you are speech was a little too much for me.
Yes, it was.
That was a little much for me. But
Especially because that's all it took for Brie Larson. You're right.
But here's the thing, though.
I am good.
It's well acted. Lashana Lynch like is selling me. And then, of course, Brie Larson is like selling me. That is a comic book scene from like a comic book cartoon. Like the old X-Men cartoons where they got to give each other the pep talk. That's that obligatory scene. But the acting in it is what it was.
Without question. I really did take notice of Lashana Lynch's acting in that scene as well. And I think that's kind of what we're hitting on here is that there are holes in this movie, like we said. But every quote-unquote bad scene has a silver lining to it, either with a payoff or with the acting. They really do, if you go into it with an objective mindset and just looking to be impressed, I think you will be impressed, but even by the shortcomings, in a way.
Now, her character name is Maria Rambeau, spelled E-A-U.
It's ridiculous.
They totally missed an opportunity there. If her name was Ajana Rambeau, then she could have had her own parody franchise from, like, the real Rambeau.
Goddamn Vietnam is what happened.
She could have gone... She could have gone and had her own storyline in Vietnam.
I also, the plot line, the main plot line, this is my final gripe, but it's a big one. The main plot line where it's the power was in you all along and Carol Danvers has to one-up Supreme Intelligence. And the only thing she has to do that is you got to harness your skills. Oh, you mean like this? And she does nothing to harness her skills. And then she's harnessed her skills.
She trains with... hand-to-hand fighting with Jude Law. And we get that she is always training herself, right? It's also recalling all of her military training and her whole life as an athlete, which I love that that's done in flashbacks. We'll get to that in a minute. But bottom line is they take so many montages in Iron Man, right? To show how Iron Man learns to fly. They take so many montages in Spider-Verse to show how the kid learns how to web sling.
Right.
So it's been done so much better in this movie. We started to get like her, you know, being clumsy with her hand flying.
It's trial and error. Yeah. And we don't get it here.
We don't get any more montages with it. She just becomes Captain Marvel in the sky doing incredible things. And I'm in so much awe over the visuals.
And there is subtext to that, too. Right. It's a strong message for women, little girls especially. You know, you don't need to go above and beyond. You have strength in you. You just need to reach down sometimes and find it. I get it.
It worked in Wonder Woman the same way it works here. And I had some gripes with Wonder Woman for the same reason.
Right.
Because I don't think it works necessarily in a quote-unquote story arc where you're suspending your disbelief. But then when you think about the thematics of it, it totally is a great message. It's like the greatest message. And it's as a metaphor, it totally works.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as a metaphor, it works. And they also, it's not like this wasn't a long movie anyway. They had 2+ hours where they did have to do enough to characterize her. They had a huge plot twist in Jude Law being the bad guy after all, which they had to substantiate. So I get it.
We're saying yeah, but for a lot of the negatives here, which is great. Because
it is.
Even with the Jude Law thing, you give a lot of agency to that villain where he tries to be crafty, right? He totally tries to be crafty in that last fight scene. You think you're getting a big Western standoff.
This is the Indiana Jones homage. Yeah.
And they totally went Indiana Jones on it at the end. I love that. And it wasn't as big of a laugh because I knew what was going to happen.
Exactly.
I think they were going to Indiana Jones it where she was just going to shoot him.
Which was hilarious. I mean, it was hilarious. Right. You're right. We all saw it coming, and especially students of cinema like we are. We all knew it was coming.
We know it's coming, but the 50,000 younger people, they do not know that's coming. So that's why you repeat a convention or repeat a joke or whatever. And that's why it works.
And there's so much, all those little things that I imagine some people, which that want nothing but this movie to fail because of misogynistic or sexist reasons. Yeah, those things are in there that you could point to and say, this is overly feminist. This is trying too hard. You know what? Maybe. But I don't think it was offensive at all. And I don't think it was transparent or this was a movie made just to impress feminists at all.
I think I was in awe of the spectacle of Wonder Woman. But even Wonder Woman did a great job of doing some next level things with the script. Like the hiding the ball with the villain the same in a similar way. And I think they actually took, you know, some cues from Wonder Woman. And this movie, what they did with the villains is phenomenal. Like, I totally did not expect that. Ben Mendelsohn is the perfect actor to do this
with because
he's just
You
want to
hate him. You want to hate him so bad.
Dripping with villainy in
especially
so many
especially in that makeup. That makeup is bad guy makeup. Ben Mendelsohn is a bad guy actor.
He's the bad guy. Yeah. He's the Green Man. He's insidious in how he infiltrates Earth. Like, it's an alien invasion. And there's so many things that just setting you up. No. They are on the run they're basically at the mercy of this genocidal maniac who's been a genocidal maniac in another Marvel film. And he's trying to cleanse the galaxy of this race, too.
I mean, and how about that for a highlight as well? You are on record during our Vice OSP about how it's too politically biased. For me, this is a politically biased movie. I mean, talking about refugees and not having a home and people being willing to accept them versus people that want to cleanse or have an ethnic cleansing. I mean, this is, and you could love that or hate that in its own rights. And I can understand if there's people that don't want politics in their movies, they don't want the Me Too movement or the gender empowerment in their movies. Yeah, you're going to have a problem with this. Me personally, I think it's important to highlight those things. One, because they're very important on their own merits. Two, because of where we are in 2019, how these are all big moments and big movements. So I like seeing that. Personally, and I am a biased liberal, I happen to agree with the point of view that it's giving, that if you are open to these types of people, you should be welcoming to refugees. The power is inside all these young little girls and boys to fight that. You know, I like that. It works on me.
I think they kind of went to the playbook, in a sense, because you're modernizing this in 1990, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you had a lot of refugee crises in that age as well. Some big ones. And you have a populace that looks one way, and now you have green people that look another way.
Mm-hmm.
So the refugees, especially in the 90s, did not look like white America, bottom line.
No, absolutely.
All right, so you had some in Europe as well. You had the whole Kosovo situation, but you also had the Rwanda situation.
And you had what the Gulf War was all, yeah.
So I think that's a good thing, because here you have these characters that you think are going to be the bad guys, and they're totally
because
not.
Because they look different, yeah.
Yeah,
they so, look. And that's another thing. It's simple, a high-concept script, because there's so many thematic analogies, characteristic analogies, not just on one thing. It's not just a political movie. It's not just a damning stereotype movie. It's not just a gender empowerment. There's a lot of different subtext and a lot of different layers of this, which is something Mike and I both ask for in screenwriting all the time, whether it's to characterization or to plot. This one happens to do both.
I like when a subplot is a little, you know, the metaphor doesn't have to be 17 layers deep in an MCU movie, I don't think.
I don't think it can be.
It doesn't have
to
be.
There's too much to do.
You're doing too much. You have to make an entertaining film. So the fact that they pulled off that total magic trick on me, I'm a fairly sophisticated moviegoer.
I'm joking.
At least I've seen so many movies that it's hard to fool me.
You
nowadays.
Are very sophisticated as a movie. Yes.
Sophisticated is the wrong word, right? Because that's bougie. That's pat myself on the back. I'm an asshole. But bottom line is, I've seen so many movies, it's really hard to fool me. This movie fooled me, flattened me on my ass, fooled me so much that character played by Ben Mendelsohn turned out to be a good guy.
What a great casting. And this is a casting should absolutely be an Academy Awards category, because this would be in the front running right now, because Ben Mendelsohn was awesome. Jude Law did an awesome job. Whether you talk about plots, subtext, performances, whatever angle you want to take it, for me, I really think it all worked in concept, and that is only heightened by the fact that the degree of difficulty for this and what the scrutiny it was going to face just from being the first female-led Marvel movie, whether you talk about it because you don't like female-led movies or you talk about it because it took Marvel 21 fucking movies to get to a female-led Marvel movie, it's going to have its criticisms about it, and I think it kind of avoided as many landmines as it could have.
In many ways, it transcended conventions.
Yeah.
And they got very creative with those conventions and those setups, because they're working it. All right, this is like Wonder Woman, but then we're going to go a different twist on it. And I just think that's next level screenwriting. I think that's basically staying ahead of the viewer, and even viewers like us who see every freaking movie in the world. And that's crazy. Yeah, we can guess ahead of you once the scene kind of starts, and we know it's going to be an Indiana Jones thing, but at the same time, we like it too. How about that cat? The cat's another
thing. Didn't see that coming.
Not at all. The cat might have been a bomb. I didn't know. Like, we've all seen Men in Black, and the cat is a bigger character.
That's another homage. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that's totally a Men in Black trope right there.
And you kind of have a Men in Black agency with S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, because they're basically the ones that are called into the situation when there's a quote-unquote alien life form that has been, like, confirmed.
Yeah.
Right? So S.H.I.E.L.D. is sent, and there's one joke made about the cat with Ben Mendelsohn. It was just like a funny little gag that Ben Mendelsohn's character was afraid of the cat. But we didn't think much of it. I knew it was going to pay off, but I had no idea it was going to do the Groot thing and be that alien of ridiculous strength.
Especially when the Skree have that, like, the it's like human male, low danger.
It's a nun.
Not a threat, yeah.
And then Samuel's like, all right, well, that thing's
broken. That thing
must
be broken, yeah. Oh, and masculinity take, oh my God.
Now,
The joke worked.
Here's the thing. The follow-up jokes on how he loses his eye worked for me. But once he loses his eye by the cat scratching it, that's ridiculous. Come on.
I loved that.
I did not.
That's the most... the most humanizing Nick Fury has been through in 21 movies.
Here's the thing. The joke on top of that, that Clark Gregg has, I heard that they burned your eye out. That was perfect. But once it happens, like I'm like, oh, come on.
No, he's man. Just like,
booju,
no.
Booju.
Yes.
Scratches his eye.
Because Nick Fury is nothing but this solemn badass that we've seen in combat. He's a super soldier and he loses his eye like that?
I needed that hot tub time machine. Where the, with the arm
I was
gap.
Thinking that.
I wanted him to get poked in the eye this entire film.
Oh my God, this is how it happens.
Yeah, that did happen. I want him to be holding his eye after every scene. And they didn't go that far
that
with it,
been
which
a,
is probably good because it would distracted you. It's not a total, you know, gimmick fest.
That would have been a great payoff. And speaking of payoffs, let's talk about the two post-credit scenes.
Yes.
Okay. There was one that is of great import, I would say.
Basically, I wrote that in my, you know, my guessing the plot.
Did you?
Yeah, I wrote the back. My scene was deleted.
Oh, okay.
From that stinger.
I see.
Because she basically saw that thing go off and said, oh, and then came back.
That's true. That's true. That's exactly what happened. So we do see at this gathering of the remaining Avengers.
I'm on the
Avengers.
Cutting room floor again.
Gathering of remaining Avengers, Captain America, Black Widow. The pager for Captain Marvel's going off and it finally stops. They don't understand why it stopped. They want to restart it. Black Widow gives the command to restart it, turns around, and Captain Marvel is there saying, where's Fury?
We've worked very hard not to spoil Infinity War at all, and either in the spoiler or non-spoiler
Which has been
section.
So difficult.
So we're going to avoid it still, but bottom line is Infinity War gets a little dark, and we know from the Avengers Endgame trailers, even though if you haven't seen those, they kind of barely not spoil it as well. But bottom line is, we know we're going into a dark movie next. This gives you a lot of hope.
Yeah.
That you have
totally.
This, basically a Superman character. She's now like a Superman character.
Oh, yeah.
She's like
oh,
a
yeah.
fix-all, you think, even though you have the most powerful villain in any movie that you're going to go against. So now it's like this heavyweight fight.
And it takes away the entire exposition of needing to have any portion of the reportedly 3 hours that Endgame's going to be connecting this godlike hero
right.
to the Avengers on Earth. Like the introductions, I'm sure we're going to get an introduction scene where they hash out some shit, but the search for Captain Marvel doesn't need to be a thing that happens in the plot now.
No.
We're here. We're just, let's get to the everything everyone
She's
wants.
She's with the group.
Right.
I think
that's very important. I think that was a really clever way of getting that done as well.
I agree.
Second post-credit scene, if you stay till the very, very end.
I'm totally lost on the basically where's Waldo-ness of that Tesseract. Because that Tesseract's
been
everywhere.
Yeah, I don't think this is canon. I don't think there's a way that this could be canon.
Well, it's 1995. I don't know the timeline of Marvel movies. That happens before. Like, S.H.I.E.L.D. had the Tesseract at some point. When did they have it in the warehouse that it got broken out by Loki?
Right.
So Loki breaks it out. And then, I know the Captain America storyline finds it. Maybe that was the one that finds it.
Now, see, that's
totally
interesting.
Lost.
That's interesting because I took it as that also happened post-Infinity War, that scene.
No, the Tesseract. Isn't the Tesseract an Infinity Stone?
Yeah, which it couldn't have. Right. I'm thinking about it now. But the way they started that scene off, very clearly the implication, I think, was... very clear that that's post-Infinity War.
Agreed. Without spoiling Infinity War.
But you're absolutely right in that the timeline, that's why I don't think it has anything to do with the MCU, to be honest. I think it was just a funny scene that had to have cost $50,000 to throw in,
yeah.
just based on VFX alone.
Mike, we have to talk about the Stan Lee stuff, too. We're talking about extras.
Yes, absolutely.
I almost cried at the lead-in. That was perfect. That was wonderful.
It was very fitting.
You had the Marvel Cinematic Universe logo, the big dun 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 dun, and that every in front of every Marvel movie since they went away from the kind of like the comic book flipping of
right.
pages, since they've gone to the bigger, badder logo, of
more professional, highlighting the 10 years, yeah,
in the Marvel Studios mm-hmm. like lettering, mm-hmm. the big block lettering, you see all images of the series. It was all images of Stan Lee. That was the greatest
I would like them to keep that. I think that'd be kind of special if they kept that. I think it'd be a great homage to the man that clearly, this probably doesn't happen without. I mean, obviously, and there were reports on this when he did unfortunately pass away, that he had already filmed his scene and he would be included in Captain Marvel. He was already
done. Oh, so that really was him.
Yeah, I'm almost positive.
This is totally blowing my mind because I thought...
No, that was him. That was him.
But he said the same line, because he was like chef in South
Park.
I don't know if
the audio may have been added, right? I don't know, but... Right.
He said, good day, true believer, or whatever his line was, he repeated it like 4 times as she's going past. I'm like, well, that's very chef of them, because, I mean, it's sad, but it's chef of them.
Yeah, we just took a quick break to look up. There's a Refinery29 article where Kevin Feige had given a comment on a red carpet saying that this wouldn't be Stanley's final cameo. There's one more in store in the MCU, where he'll show up in the MCU. So whether that means this was computer generated, I don't think it was. I'm almost positive this wasn't.
Mike, if Clark Gable showed up in the cinematic universe at this point, I wouldn't be surprised. They could pull it off on me. I would probably be asking the same thing.
Be a hell of a twist.
Did they film Clark Gable? Like, they can make it look so real.
They
like
can.
With Samuel Jackson's visual effects,
yeah.
I totally stopped noticing anything, or I didn't notice anything the whole movie, that to the point where, like, I couldn't tell if that was a CGI Stan Lee or not.
I'm with you.
The only thing that tipped me off was the repeat of the dialogue.
Right.
It was a broken record dialogue.
Yeah, right. And I think that's fair to say that the audio probably definitely was added in after the fact. But we'll see. We at least got one more of him to come. This is the final stop. I've been on record saying it's a very important Marvel movie, the most important Marvel movie to set up what's going to happen in Endgame. We didn't really get much as far as what we think may happen in Endgame. Right? There weren't a lot of questions answered.
No, not a lot at all. Basically, it's just she shows up, she's going to be with the group in the next movie. That's all you need.
I'm very curious. So let's wrap this up now, Mike. Final grades here from us.
We both had the same grade.
Yeah.
I decided it on my car ride home without talking to Mike. We both texted each other. We liked it very much. Mm-hmm. I have a B+88.
Same here.
And I think it fits with my other B+88s. We do have some issues with the movie, but it's all like, yeah, but, because there's a lot of silver linings to the things that are wrong. Like, that's just a testament to good filmmakers. Also, it's a testament to a filmmaking operation that just really knows what it's doing. Because even if they notice some flaws in the plot, they're like, yeah, but we're going to add these 5 jokes.
Right.
And we're going to add these kick-ass visuals. And we're gonna do this that may not work on people that see 100 movies a week, but still they're going to enjoy these next 10 things. So to me, even the problems I had with it, I love 10 more things or 10, the fallout, or I love the payoffs beyond that. So I can't get too negative about this movie. It's a B+A.
You took the words out of my mouth in that there are shortcomings.
I tried to by rambling on that long. Whatever words you could have had, I tried to take them out of your mouth.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg. There are pitfalls. There are shortcomings in the film. But you're right. They all do have payoffs attached to them. And you are saying, yeah, that happened. But also, it led to this. And it was the cause of this. And there are silver linings all up and down the card. I also, hard and fast, B+88. I don't think this is going to have that Black Panther effect at all. This is probably not going to be a Best Picture nominee. Probably not going to be anything to see from the Academy at the end of the day outside of visual effects.
Yeah, but how much better is this movie than Bohemian Rhapsody
and Green Book? Not the same.
It's so much better.
Not even close.
So, I don't know. Like, this movie says such big things. Like, the Academy is starting to pick the movie that says a good message more than it's picking the best movie of the year. Like, this is a B+88. I've had a lot of B+88s nominated for Best Picture in my day.
Oh, if it gets nominated, I will be clicking my heels. And you're absolutely right in that it's far superior to a lot of the Best Picture nominees that we just came off of in 2017, yeah. 2018, or 2018, 20, whatever year we just passed.
Darkest Hour, The Post is just way better than those two movies.
You'd probably say the same for Vice, Green Book, like you said, Bohemian Rhapsody, like you said. So No question there. Yeah, I would love to see it. We'll see, and we'll keep up with it, obviously, because that's kind of what we do here, making award season year-round. We want to hear your thoughts on Captain Marvel. Did you watch it? Did you see it? Do you plan to this weekend? And if you did, what are your thoughts? What do you think about it? And what do you think it sets the table for in terms of Endgame coming up in another month and a half or so? You can reach out to us on our social media. We're Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on Twitter, MikeMikeAndOscar.com, MikeMikeAndOscar@gmail.com, and Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Reddit. We're available everywhere you hear podcasts. Tune in, Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, etc., etc. Type in Mike, Mike, and Oscar. You will see us waving back at you in cartoon form. Michael, Captain Marvel in the books. First OSP of 2019 in the books. Some words of wisdom to leave us on here.
I'm a dog person, but I like cats now.
Yeah,
I
that,
do.
That
I,
did a lot for cats, this
that
movie.
That did so much for cats. I do. I'm like, every cat that I've come across, I've been a little afraid of because I know they're predators.
Right.
I know if you let a cat outside, it will hunt its prey and kill that prey. Little mice, little birds. I've seen my neighbor's cats playing with baby birds before they kill them in the yard below me.
Oh, my God.
And I've seen these cruel serial murderers do this. But then the cat in this movie is just so freaking adorable from start to finish. There's all these gags worked with the cat that I can't believe they pulled off. Like, why the cat is brought with them, I have no idea until, of course, I have an idea. It turns out to be this big alien creature. So bottom line is, the cat in this movie made me like cats.
Yeah, I agree. Did a lot for cats, but I'm still allergic to them, so they need to stay away from me. Guys, when reality sucks, come watch movies with us. We will catch you next time.
See ya.